This is Mike Benedetti. It's October 17th, 2006, and I'm talking with Kevin Kassen about how to get your library to change its lending policy. In 2006, the Worcester Public Library was convinced to change its lending policy, specifically a policy about lending towards the homeless. It would discriminate against people who were homeless and people who were in certain kinds of transitional housing. And whether or not you think that this discrimination is appropriate or not is another issue. But anyway, that was what the policy was. So Kevin, how did people find out about this policy?
I think the first word of it actually was Dave McMahon, that was the co-director over at Dismiss House program for ex-prisoners and students. And one of his, a resident of that house, who was a volunteer within the library, went to check out a book one day. A few books, actually, one day, and was told, sorry, you live at Dismiss, you only can take out two.
Right, because that was the policy. It was like regular people could check out like 40 books.
40 items, yeah.
But if you were on, there was actually a list of residences, like a real blacklist. The library didn't like calling it a blacklist, but that's what it was.
Right.
And if you were on that list, you can only check out two books.
And so he was both startled and he was embarrassed. Here he was somebody that was a volunteer working in the library and in front of people in line behind him and his co-workers, he was being told, sorry, you're one of those people, you know, you can't have as many books as everybody else.
Okay.
And so David made some initial inquiries around that, and eventually there was a, I don't know, paragraph or two in Worcester Magazine that I caught, and I made a little mental note about it. And I followed up with Dave a few months later, and he said he'd had some conversations with the library and nothing really come of it and stuff. And so I started just percolating with other folks, like, is this something we should be paying a little more attention to? After that, in January, I decided to just put a public records request into the library and really find out, you know, what is this lending policy and is there a list?
And public records request is like a formal request and it's like a state law or something, right?
Right. So there's a state law that if something exists, and it doesn't fall into one of a few categories of being personnel records or public safety, police investigation materials. Or there's some categories that are exempted. But otherwise, if something exists, whether it's on paper, in digital format, or whatever, then it's public. Mm-hmm. And so that initial little blurb in the paper said, you know, the library had some addresses that you couldn't borrow from. So that implied to me a list, which implies it has to be something that exists.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I learned from this was that some of the folks that I would have expected to know about this sooner and respond to it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways expecting the social service system that was directly being impacted because it was some of the shelters in that group or residential homes, there was no strong, quick reaction against it.
Yeah, I was part of the Catholic worker community on Mason Street at the time, which is like on like the highest level of being banned on that list, and none of us had any idea that our house was on that list. The policy was only a couple of years old, so the people who lived there were all grandfathered out of it, but the guests who were coming through, none of them ever said, oh, I went down to the library and tried to apply under this address, and they denied me.
Right. But even after that initial blurb in Worcester Magazine came out, it didn't hit the radar screens of agencies across the city. It was... They may have seen it, it just didn't make priority level. And in some ways, it reminds me of organizing around the anti-panhandling campaign that, you know, here was an issue that the agencies just, it didn't resonate or didn't reach a priority level for them to respond against. It's just like, we think that's bad, but we're busy.
So you filed your information request to the library and they complied pretty quickly with that.
Responding with a list of the property, the addresses that are blacklisted,
mm-hmm.
as well as an actual written policy was of who can take out what and under what circumstances.
So how did things then move to the next level with different activists in the community?
Well, once I saw the list, we published it on Worcester Indie Media. We put it on Pine Coffee, other blogs, and got it out there. And folks at Real Solutions started talking about it, started handing it out to some of the different agencies around saying, you know, look at this list. What do you see in this list?
Mm-hmm.
And the type of things I started hearing coming back were, you know, surprised at some of the places that were put on there. Places like Worcester State Hospital, a institution working with folks that are dealing with mental illness, or AdCare Hospital, which is primarily working with folks dealing with substance abuse issues. Mm-hmm. Then you had, it wasn't just homeless shelters, it was residential programs for people in recovery or teenagers or things like that. Right. And then you also had people start talking about what wasn't on the list, and it was such a weirdly constructed list that at one point there's one shelter that's two buildings. And so if you were in one of the buildings, your address is on the list. If you were a homeless person, family, living in the other shelter, your address wasn't on the list, and you would have been fine. And so it was just such a
weird thing. So, I mean, to get away from the details of the policy then a little bit, so then a meeting was arranged at the library, is that right?
Meeting was arranged at the library, Real Solutions. Folks from Legal Assistance Corporation were invited along, ACLU. And we sat down with the board to talk with them, and you were there, and I think...
Yeah, it was some of the members of the library board, it was the executive director of the library, chief librarian, lawyers for the library. Was there a lawyer for the city there?
No.
Okay.
No.
But it was sort of a random collection of people who were concerned about it and people who were connected to the library. Mm-hmm. And it was a good meeting. I thought the library did well. It was an interesting meeting for me because I think before this happened, I wasn't convinced that this policy was so horrific. And after talking with the library about it for an hour, I was totally convinced that it was irresponsible. So it was interesting, you know, it was interesting to have that meeting because for me that was a real turning point in my thinking about this, that this was actually an issue that was totally worth working on.
Right. I think seeing the lack of thought that had gone into it in some ways from the library, and like they talked about all the thought that went into it, but when you paid attention,
when we started asking real questions about it was just like, well, actually, we just kind of threw this together.
Right.
And so, you know, the meeting happened and people offered some suggestions on each side and nothing really came out of it at that point. And so then what happened?
At that point, Legal Assistance said they were interested in pursuing this further. They were horrified, I think would be probably an accurate word, by that meeting in terms of what came out.
Right. And the library didn't seem very... I mean, the library, in fact, didn't seem and was not receptive to suggestions that were being made at the meeting. I mean, they kept saying, we need some suggestions for you, and then people would make all kinds of suggestions out of left field, right field, center field, and the library was like, no. Every time. They're like, no, we can't do that. We can't even talk about that.
So at that point, Legal Assistance in Worcester stepped forward and said, you know, we'd like to pursue this as a legal entity and as a group of lawyers. We need clients, and so we can only move forward if there are clients that are opposed to this. So they started conversations, other people started conversations in the city, and looking for families or individuals that had been hurt by this policy.
Yeah, I was actually personally really frustrated at this point that it had to go to a lawsuit, because I don't like the whole idea of resolving things in this way. But again, there didn't seem like there was any...
Well, I think that's the thing we said, that we were there and we tried. We went over an hour in that meeting with the library, which for the most part was cordial, but
it was very
wasn't going anywhere.
It was very respectable on both sides. Yeah, it didn't seem like there was going to be anything.
You know, one of the things I remember that was just frustrating was they would always go back as to, we have a fiduciary responsibility to implement this policy.
Oh, and they also talked too about that because they were part of a network of libraries, a regional network of libraries, they couldn't change their lending policy. That this was somehow impossible. Somehow the Worcester Public Library was like subsidiary to the Central Massachusetts Library, whatever. Mm-hmm. So the lawsuit came out, and actually they seemed to have found some pretty good clients, like not what you would expect. I mean, I think the initial idea behind this was like, well, there's these guys who are heroin addicts living in homeless shelters, and they're checking out a bunch of books, and then they're just like throwing them in the storm drain. And
well, the other one I had a board of director member tell me on the side after is, you don't understand, these people are taking DVDs and selling them on the street for a profit. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't laugh back at her, but I talked about it after. You know, I don't think there's a black market for, you know, how to grow better roses in your backyard DVDs. Mm-hmm. You know, which there's certainly a wide assortment of DVDs at the library.
It's an eclectic collection, though. I would guess that the most popular DVDs would be stolen and sold within about 2 days.
Right.
Then it would be all the opera stuff and goofy German expressionistic films and whatever would be the stuff that would still be there. So anyway, they found these clients, you know, one of the, and they're really touching stories, and the lawsuit went out, and the reports in the press were actually interesting. You know, I think first of all, because the clients were in, there was a woman who had like fled an abusive relationship, if I remember, with her kid, and like she'd been homeschooling the kid, and then she is in this transitional shelter thing because she's like a battered spouse or whatever. And the library's like, well, you're in the transitional shelter. You can only check out two books. Which means she can't homeschool her child anymore because she can't get enough materials together to do coursework.
I think that's one of the things for me, is that the more we all took the time to ask some questions, the more things came together really easily in some ways. That when we ask questions, we really start to understand what was happening at the library.
Yeah, when I first heard this, I was like, oh, this is just a bunch of bleeding heart liberals saying homeless people should be able to check out a bunch of books and, you know, throw them in the storm drain. And once we started asking questions, we realized if not only were a lot of people getting caught in the crossfire by this policy, who the policy wasn't trying to target in the first place, and that the policy was put together really sloppily, that there were plenty of non-institutional places where a lot of transients live that were not even on the library's radar. The library had no idea that these places were even there, that really no study and no thought had gone into it. So, because I'm a huge fan of the library, and so I was both horrified at this, but I was also kind of happy, because I was like, okay, well, this isn't the library being heartless or malicious or bad. This is just the library being sort of naive or ignorant of what the real issue is. You know, not even being lazy, just not, you know, I don't know, maybe not talking to the right people or not having people with more experience help them put together the policy. So, and this actually came out in the press articles. This is why I feel like some of what we're saying is not really confidential, because in the articles in the press, they were asking the library, show us some statistics on the people who you're targeting by this policy. And they were like, I don't know. There's a lot of waffling going on, and no information ever came out. The press was asking the same kind of questions that we were asking, and the library was saying, we don't have it, you know, or just saying no comment or saying whatever. So the lawsuit seemed to drag on for a while. And then the library board came together and put out a completely new policy, which didn't mention people who are homeless or in transitional housing at all. It was just like a unified policy, you know. And then that also got a good amount of press, and I thought it was very encouraging. And I called up the head librarian to thank you for doing that. But it seems like the lawsuit is still dragging on, but the policy got changed.
And I think the lawsuit will get dealt with soon. I think the city's dealing with bigger things in their books or whatever.
And it's just sort of quibbling about details or something, probably.
Right, right. But I think one thing that's important for us to do is to look at a real list of the resources or the steps that pull this together. So for me, the public records request was really important, that the people in the community saw a glimpse of something that might be askew or not right, and we said, we need to know more about this.
Okay.
And so we should all, in whatever community we're in, just ask, what is the policy in my city? What is the policy in my town? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't seem clear, you know, find out how to make a public records request and get real details to see that. I think another really key thing we did was quickly look for partners. And so there was a community-based group, Real Solutions, working on this. But there was a reached out immediately to Legal Assistance and made sure Legal Assistance was at the table and asking questions that some of us might not have thought about. Or really, I think just being at that initial meeting, they could sense in the same way that we did, you know, this is not right. This is not, there's not the thinking here.
The ACLU is another group that was involved.
The ACLU was another, right. And in the same way, I think we worked quickly to pull in and connect with the social service agencies in the city. And I don't feel they were good initially around this. It didn't make their radar screens. They didn't pay attention. But as you said, once people started asking some questions, it was the social service agencies that found these great, you know, people that had been really hurt by this policy. And then it was once they saw that, they came on board more with this policy being wrong and became co-defendants themselves in the lawsuit. So I think those are the type of things that people in other communities can be doing, is asking those questions and quickly looking for the partners to kind of move forward.
And it sort of disappointed me that it had to be done by a lawsuit, but it was very encouraging to me that it did get changed, and it got changed within, I don't know, within a year of people being aware of it. More like 9 months.
Maybe, yeah, right.
Between Dave McMahon becoming aware of it and the library board changing the policy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think from our end, you know, we trusted the library to move ahead, so I wouldn't say we pushed this and tried to get it done quickly. We were nudging, checking in periodically, and hoping that the non-legal methods would have moved forward more quickly.
Mm-hmm. Maybe in other situations they would. Anyway, I'm glad that the library, like I said, I called them up and I said, I'm glad that you guys were able to change this, even if it took a lawsuit. And they were like, yeah, great. But
well, I have a phone call into the Fitchburg Public Library, which still has a discriminatory policy, and they're refusing to talk to me until the lawsuit settled. But as soon as that lawsuit settles,
we'll see.
I want to find out if they're going to keep theirs or they're going to change.
Because that's another thing that came out of all of this, is that the Worcester Public Library was able to change their policy, even though they were part of a library network that had a different policy. So they did have more,
right.
We know that they had more power over their policies than maybe they really, I don't know, thought they did.
Right.
Anyway, Kevin, thanks for talking to me about this. This podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license. For more information, go to pieandcoffee.org.